Chapter 27 and 28 are supposed to be the blessings and curses, but what is it primarily? Curses, okay? Chapter 27, Moses divides them up on two mountains, Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim, okay? And he says, we're going to do blessings and curse. Well, he says this is what you're supposed to do in the land. They don't actually do it because they're still in Moab, right? But he says, you're going to do blessings and curses. And then what happens in chapter 27? Yeah, what are there? Are there blessings and curses in chapter 27? Only curses. Only curses. So the question is, where are the blessings? Well, they're not there because Israel's not going to get blessings, okay? And the curses in chapter 27 are individual, okay? They're very much individual sins. If you look really quick, right? Cursed is he who moves his neighbor's boundary mark. Well, a nation as a whole does not move their neighbor's boundary mark. That is something an individual does. So chapter 27 is establishing the judicial guilt of everybody. Basically saying, Israel, you are to be a holy nation set apart. You are to obey, but you can't. Okay? And in case you're like, well, I don't move my neighbor's boundary mark. I don't lie with my father's wife. I don't distort justice, right? Because then we get verse 26. Cursed is he who does not confirm the words of this law by doing them. So that's a catch-all. If you don't do everything, then you are cursed. And that cursed is establishing guilt before God. Every man stands guilty before God. Chapter 28 then deals with ramifications for the nation as a whole. Okay? So, first, in the first 14 verses of chapter 28 over here under the blessings column, okay, we have all these different kinds of blessings, but we only get 14 verses of them. Chapter 28 is 68 verses long. Okay, so you have 14 verses of blessing and the rest of the chapter is curses, okay? We have blessing of place. It doesn't matter where you are. Country, city, you will be blessed. Blessing of seed. Every seed of your body, so your offspring, seed of your animals, their offspring, seed of your land. Everything you plant, it will all flourish. Okay? Blessing of product, your basket and your kneading bowl. Everything you produce, it will be blessed. Blessing of travel, if you go in or come out. So it doesn't matter where you are or how you get there. Yes? Okay, can everyone see? Oh, no, no. Interrupt as you need to. That's fine. Blessing of travel. Go out, come in. Doesn't matter. You'll be blessed. Blessing of victory. Your enemies will come in one way and they'll flee seven ways because God is the one that fights your battles, not you. Right? Blessing on all your endeavors. Remember we said that the Hebrew says anything your hand stretches out to do, it will be blessed. Number seven, blessing of relationship. This was relationship with God specifically, okay? So he will make you into a holy people, his people. Okay, the eighth one, blessing of farming. God's going to send the rain when you need it at the right times. Okay, and then nine, blessing of power. You will be the head and not the tail. You will lend to the nations and not borrow. Okay, so those were the blessings. And it was all conditional on if, right? If they obey. Then starting in verse 15, we get the curses. And we see that the curses undo all the blessings and then go even further. And we also see that the curses distort the order of the blessings. Because when you start to disobey God, everything goes into chaos. So first, we have cursing a place. Doesn't matter where you are. City, country, you're going to be cursed. Then, instead of the second one being cursing of seed, we have cursing of product. Your kneading bowl, your basket, everything you produce, going to be cursed. Then we get cursing of seed, which was the second blessing. Okay, your offspring, your animal's offspring, the seed of the ground, it's all going to be cursed. Cursing of travel. Doesn't matter where you are or how you get there, you're going to be cursed. Right? Then we skip number five, can go straight to number six, cursing on all your endeavors. Whatever your hand stretches out to do, and it uses the same phrase, it will be cursed. Cursing of farming. You expect rain. It's going to be so dry, all that's going to come down from heaven is dust. OK? okay? Because it's going to be so dry that the wind blows, it's just going to be dust. The heaven's going to be bronze. The earth's going to be hard as iron because it just bakes in the sun. Okay? Verse 25, 26, curse of defeat instead of the blessing of victory. Now you go out one way and you're going to scatter seven. Because when God no longer fights for you, then you have no hope of winning in battle. Okay? And then we ended in the middle here, because we're in verse 35, which is in the middle of verse 27 to 42. And this is by far the longest section. Curse of relationship. You lose your special status with God. Okay? And under that, we said that in verses 27 to 29, it says that Israel will get the plagues of Egypt. And the idea is that Israel, you become no different to God than Egypt. And we know that Egypt was decimated by God. Okay? Then in verses 30 to 34, we see that Israel will be treated like the Canaanites. You're going to build a house, someone else is going to live in it. You're going to have a field, someone else is going to get the produce from it. You're going to have a wife, another man will violate her. And this is when Israel came into the land. In Deuteronomy 6, verses 10 to 11, God said, you're going to live in houses you don't build. You're going to get produce out of a field that you did not plant, right? And so now what Israel is going to do, the Canaanites, as they go in and take over Canaan, right, another nation is going to do the same to them. So the idea is they have lost their special status with God. God is treating them like Egypt, and God is treating them like the Canaanites. Okay?
What verses are those in?
30 to 34. Okay. Yes, 27 to 29. And that's where we ended last time because we ran out of time. 30 to 34, Deuteronomy 28, 30 to 34.
And what did you say, special what? Lost their special
relationship with God, their special status. Okay, so they're no longer, you know, a holy people, a kingdom of priests. They are now treated like any other pagan nation. Okay. Any other questions on my very quick review? Can someone read for me Deuteronomy 28, verse 35 to 42?
The Lord will strike you on the knees and legs with sore boils from which you cannot be healed, from the sole of your foot to the crown of your head. The Lord will bring you and your king, whom you set over you, to a nation which neither you nor your fathers have known, and there you shall serve other gods, wood and stone. You shall become a horror and a proverb and a taunt among all the people where the Lord drives you. You shall bring out much seed to the field, but you will gather in little, for the locusts will consume it. You shall plant and cultivate vineyards, but you will neither drink of the wine nor gather the grapes, for the worm will devour them. You shall have olive trees throughout your territory, but you will not anoint yourself with the oil, for the olives will drop off. You shall have sons and daughters, but they will not be yours, for they will go into captivity. The crickets shall possess all your trees and the produce of your ground.
Okay, so this is the rest of the section on relationships. So in verse 35 to 37, we get more plagues and exile. Okay, so we get boils, kind of like Job got, right? That you cannot be healed from the sole of your foot to the crown of your head. You're going to be as miserable as Job. Okay, then verse 36, the Lord will bring you and your king, whom you set over you, to a nation which neither you nor your fathers have known, and there you shall serve other gods, wood and stone. You shall become a horror, a proverb, and a taunt among all the people where the Lord drives you. Okay? So you are going to go into exile. And not only will Israel go into exile, who else goes into exile? Verse 36.
Their king.
Does Israel have a king?
No.
Not for how many more years? Isn't it like 400-ish? Ish years, okay? So they're not going to have a king for another like 400 years. And yet Moses is already saying the Davidic dynasty, what's going to happen?
Exile.
It's going to fail. So before David is even crowned king, before the Davidic covenant, before any of that, 400 years before any of that, we already know the king will fail. We're looking for a king. You know, we want a king over us. The king, right, in Deuteronomy, we have rules about what the king is supposed to do. And part of the rule of the king is he is supposed to establish righteousness and justice. So already in Deuteronomy, we know that the coming king of Israel is going to fail. The Davidic dynasty is going to fall. Okay, 400 years before even Saul, we even get Saul. Okay, then end of verse 36, you shall serve other gods of wood and stone. This second generation, a lot of them could actually remember living in Egypt and living among a nation that served gods of wood and stone. Okay, this is what is coming if they do not obey, right? And notice that worshiping false gods, worshiping idols, this is part of the curse. This is the punishment, okay? You abandon me, you abandon Yahweh, you don't obey Yahweh, you go after other gods. What's the punishment that you go after other gods? It's going to be worse than you could. You get exactly what you want, and it will be worse than you could ever imagine. Okay? So they get what they want. I mean, because that's what's going to cause the curses to come primarily, is that they abandoned God and they worship other gods, right? So God's going to give them what they want. And along with what they want is going to come all the curses. Verse 37, you shall become a horror, a proverb, and a taunt among all the people where the Lord drives you. So wherever they get exiled to, everybody's going to be like, oh, aren't you glad you're not an Israelite? Right? They're the proverb. Oh, you better obey or you're going to become like the Israelites, you know, cursed by their God. So instead of being exalted above the nations, which if they have their right relationship with God, that's what God promised them to do. Instead of being exalted above the nations, they are now what every nation does not want to become. They want nothing to do with them. 38 to 42, this is another set of futility curses where you're going to work so hard and get nothing out of it, right? You shall bring out much seed to the field, but gather in little. You shall plant vineyards, right? But you won't gather any grapes because the worm will devour them. Olive trees, right? But you don't get any olive oil because the olives just fall off before they're ripe. You shall have sons and daughters, but they shall not be yours, for they shall go into captivity. Okay? Israel's relationship with God has fundamentally changed. So all they do is cursed and will result in nothing. Right? Their children are going to end up in exile, verse 41, right? The sons and daughters are supposed to benefit you in your old age, right? But instead, they're going to go off to other nations. And really, verse 42, the cricket shall possess all your trees and the produce of your land. So you're not going to be there anymore. And what's going to take over? It's going to be the crickets, the locusts, right? They're going to get everything that you planted and that you did. And you're going to get no good out of it. So this is what happens when you abandon God, right? Then God starts to abandon you. And this is what happens. Then the last one, verse 43 and 44. Okay, and this is going to be the curse of power. And this is going to reverse blessing number 9. Okay. So 43 and 44 says, the alien, so the foreigner, who is among you shall rise above you higher and higher, but you shall go down lower and lower. He shall lend to you, but you will not lend to him. He shall be the head, and you will be the tail. This is the exact opposite of verses 12 to 14, where it says, you shall lend to many, but you shall not borrow. The Lord will make you the head and not the tail. You only will be above and you will not be underneath. Okay? So you abandoned God. You don't obey the covenant. And instead, you have to borrow now. And you will be the tail and not the head. And even the foreigner who lives among you, who has really no power, he's going to be the one that ends up taking over and getting all the power. Okay? He will rule over you. So we see through verses 15 to 44, we reverse and then some all the blessings. So we reverse all the blessings, but there's also a lot more suffering along with the curses as well. Okay. Questions? Through verse 44. And don't worry, it just gets worse. We're not done. I know. All right, can someone read for me verses 45 to 57? It's a long chunk.
So all these curses shall come on you and pursue you and overtake you until you are destroyed, because you would not obey the voice and not obey the Lord your God by keeping his commandments and his statutes which he commanded you. And they shall become a sign and a wonder to you and your descendants forever, because you did not serve the Lord your God with joy and a glad heart for the abundance of all things. Therefore you shall serve your enemies whom the Lord shall send against you, in hunger and thirst, in nakedness, and in the lack of all things. And he will put an iron yoke on your neck until he has destroyed you. The Lord will bring a nation against you from afar, from the end of the earth, as the eagle swoops down, a nation whose language you shall not understand, a nation of fierce countenance, who shall have no respect for the old, nor show favor to the young. Moreover, it shall eat the offspring of your herd and the produce of your ground until you are destroyed, who also leaves you no grain, no wine, no oil, nor the increase of your herd, or the young of your flock, until they have caused you to perish. And it shall besiege you in all your towns until your high and fortified walls in which you have trusted come down throughout your land. And it shall besiege you in all your towns throughout the land which the Lord your God has given you. Then you shall eat the offspring of your own body, the flesh of your sons and of your daughters whom the Lord your God has given you during the siege and the distress by which your enemies shall oppress you. The man who is refined and very delicate among you shall be hostile toward his brother and toward the wife he cherishes and toward the rest of his children who remain, so that he will not give even one of them any of the flesh of his children, which he shall eat, since he has nothing else left. During the siege and the distress by which your enemy shall oppress you in all your towns, the refined and delicate woman among you who would not venture to set the sole of her foot on the ground for delicateness and refinement shall be hostile toward the husband she cherishes and toward her son and daughter and toward her afterbirth, which issues from between her legs, and toward her children whom she bears, for she shall eat them secretly for lack of anything else during the siege and the distress by which your enemy shall oppress you in your town.
All right, so after we get all the curses, right, then we get siege, right, which is the first step of exile, right, because before exile, you got to be taken over, okay, so that's what this is, first stage of exile, okay, verse 45 and 46, so all these curses shall come on you and pursue you and overtake you until you are destroyed, because you would not obey the Lord your God by keeping his commandments and his statutes, which he commanded you. They shall become a sign and a wonder on you and your descendants forever. Okay? So disobedience to God's word, Israel doesn't keep up their end of the bargain, it's going to end in destruction. It's interesting that Moses uses the word sign and wonder, because normally that's something good, a miracle, right? But here it is all the curses, okay? A sign points to something. It tells you a message, okay? Watch out, nations. This is what happens when you offend the holy true God, okay? A wonder is something that's never happened before, something very unusual, something that can only be attributed to God, okay? So here, these signs and wonders are the curses. There is a message there. Okay, Israel, you agreed to this. You said you would obey the law, and you did not. Okay, this is what happens. Wonder, I mean, this is undeniably God. This is not, you know, something that, oh, you know, Israel got a string of bad luck. No, this is undeniably God's work. Okay. Verse 47 and 48, this is the reason. Because you did not serve the Lord your God with joy and with a glad heart. The heart is the problem, right? From Deuteronomy 6, Deuteronomy has been focused on the heart. It is about the heart attitude, okay? So when things were good, they still didn't serve God with joy and a glad heart, right? For the abundance of all things. It's even when things were good, even when they were in the blessings category, their heart is still a problem, and they don't rejoice because of all God has given them with a glad heart. Verse 48, therefore, so because of that, you have a hard heart. You shall serve your enemies whom the Lord your God will send against you in hunger, in thirst, in nakedness, in the lack of all things. So because you cannot be thankful when you have all things, when you have abundance, God's going to take it all away. And you will be forced to serve your enemies and have nothing. You will be hungry. You will be thirsty. You will lack everything. Okay. They had freedom in serving God, right? Serving God, being a slave to God, is true freedom. And because they despise that true freedom, what are they going to get? They're going to get real slavery, okay, to their enemies. And it says, and he, notice that he is capital, God himself will put an iron yoke on your neck until he has destroyed you. Okay, so you are going to serve the enemy, and it's going to be with an iron yoke. Okay, a yoke you cannot break, a heavy yoke. Right, and that's what Jesus says, right? Come to me, all you are heavy burdened, and I will give you rest, for my burden is easy and my yoke is light. Right, we are still slaves to God. We still have a master that we serve, but God's yoke is easy as opposed to serving the enemy, right? His yoke is an iron yoke. 49 to 52, this is the start of the siege, right? God's going to bring a nation from afar. A nation whose language you shall not understand. Okay, so this is a nation they're not familiar with. The foreign nation is going to come and lay siege to Israel, right? Verse 50, a nation of fierce countenance who have no respect for the old, no sure favor to the young. Babylon and Assyria, they went to war for fun. Not because they really needed more land, not because any of that. They just wanted to. And they didn't care. They didn't care about the old. They didn't care about the young. They just came to decimate and wipe out. That's why, remember when we studied the laws of war in Deuteronomy, and it's under the do not murder section, right? Preserve life. Even when you go out to take life, you protect life. Who were they to kill when they went to war?
The nations that God was punishing.
Okay, but when they had conquered Canaan, and they went to war against another nation that was not the Canaanites, who were they to kill? First, remember, if you remember, they were to offer peace. And if peace was rejected, then what were they supposed to do? Kill the men and the men only, right? And when we talked about it, we said that was very not normal for that time. When you went in and you were strong and you took over, you decimated everyone. You raped and pillaged and took advantage and did whatever. And God says, no, I am a God that preserves life. I value life. So even when you have to take life, you only take the life that is necessary to be taken, which is the men, right? You spare the women, you spare the children. Okay, now, granted, when it was Canaan, the Canaanites, right, they were to wipe them out 100%. But if they were fighting other battles, they were to only fight the men. And here, what's part of their judgment? You're going to get someone that comes in and they're not going to fight by God's rules. They're going to come in and they're going to not care if you're old or young, right? They're not going to spare the infant. They're not going to spare the elderly. They're just going to come in and wipe everybody out. Okay, verse 51, moreover, she will eat the offspring of your herd, the produce of your ground, until you are destroyed. So they're going to come in, they're going to lay siege, and they're going to eat all your crops and everything that's outside the city walls. Okay, you're not going to have grain, wine, oil, the three main products of Israel. Verse 52, it shall besiege you in all your towns until your high and fortified walls in which you trusted come down, if you remember. What was Israel afraid of when God said, go take over Canaan?
The giants.
The giants and?
Their fortified cities.
What did the spies say when they came back? Do you remember?
Yes.
And the cities, they're fortified to heaven. Okay. But when God is fighting for them, does it matter how tall the walls are? No. I mean, we're reading in Joshua in school for Abby, and it's like God tells them to go out and march around the city. Is that a really good battle plan?
Yeah.
Nope. Not really. Not from man's perspective. And what happens? The walls just fall down and they can just march in. You know, yeah, eventually after they do it 7 days. But
7 days, yeah. 7 days.
Yeah. But when God's fighting for you, it doesn't matter how tall the walls are.
Okay.
And when God is against you, it doesn't matter how tall your walls are.
Yeah.
Right? So either way, your walls are irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So they're so afraid of their tall walls, but then they finally go in and conquer the land, and now they have all confidence in their tall walls. And God's like, when I'm against you, it doesn't matter how tall your walls are. Right? They're going to do nothing. Okay? Verse 50, it shall besiege you in all your towns until your high and fortified walls in which you trusted come down throughout your land. And it shall besiege you in all your towns throughout your land, which the Lord your God has given you. Okay. So it doesn't matter. Israel's going to lose the promised land. Then verse 53, it gets really awful. These 53 to 57, this is the horrors of the siege, which is basically cannibalism. Things are going to get so bad in your town, there will be literally nothing left to eat, okay? And you will turn to cannibalism. This is how low Israel will sink. They will eat their own children just to survive, okay? And then what's interesting, right, is verse 54 talks about the most refined, delicate man, right? And then verse 56, the most refined, delicate woman. And it's like almost the emphasis is on their selfishness and not on the cannibalism. It's like the emphasis is like, oh, you have the nicest man there is, and he's so refined and he's so delicate, and he won't even share his children. You know, like, why is he even eating his children in the first place? But the emphasis is on his selfishness. He won't even share with his wife or his other children whatever child he decided to sacrifice and eat. Right? It's almost, it makes the horror of cannibalism worse because it's almost just glossed over. And the focus is on the selfishness of not sharing. Okay, which really, what's the worst thing? Obviously, it's the cannibalism in the first place. Okay?
And it's not the natural tendency of
parents. No. Exactly, exactly. And Molech. Yes.
They weren't necessarily eating the children.
But they, I mean, right.
They're still killing their children.
Correct. They are still killing their children to bring good luck or winning a battle or whatever. Yes. But here, I mean, that is one thing. But actually consuming your child, I feel like, takes it to the next level. Well, and this happens in Israel.
Yeah.
If we go to 2 Kings, can someone read for me 2 Kings 6? All of these curses happen throughout 1st, 2 Kings. You can trace them all back to Deuteronomy. 2 Kings 6, 24 to 31. Can someone read for me that? 2 Kings 6, 24 to 31.
Now it happens afterward that Ben-Hadad, king of Aram, gathered all his military camp and went up and besieged Samaria. Now there was a great famine in Samaria, and behold, they besieged it until a donkey's head was sold for 80 shekels of silver and a fourth of a cab of dove's dung for 5 shekels of silver. As the king of Israel was passing by on the wall, a woman cried out to him, saying, "Save my lord, O king." He said, "If Yahweh does not save you, from where shall I save you? From the threshing floor or from the wine press?" And the king said to her, "What is the matter with you?" And she said, "This woman said to me, 'Give your son that we may eat him today, and we will eat my son tomorrow.'" So we boiled my son and ate him, and I said to her on the next day, give your son that we may eat him. But she has hidden her son. Now it happened that when the king heard the words of the woman, he tore his clothes. Now he was passing by on the wall, and the people looked, and behold, he had sackcloth beneath on his body. Then he said, my God, to do so to me, and more also, if the head of Elisha, the son of Shaphat, remains on him today.
So we have cannibalism, two women, right? And the one woman hides her son. She's not willing to share. Now, I think the implication is not that she's going to save her son, but she's going to eat the son all by herself. So there's more for her. She is not going, 31, share. And notice, who does the king blame?
Elisha.
Right, the prophet of God, okay? He doesn't blame their sin or all that Israel has done wrong. He blames the bearer of the message, you know, Elisha. Okay, so these things actually happened in Israel. So all these curses, they do come true, even the horrific ones, okay? So even a mom, right? You'd think, you know, parents want to protect their children, but it is the mom who actually bears the child, you know, and so there is a special bond there, but that doesn't even matter. Even mothers are going to eat their own children, okay? Questions on that cheerful section? Yeah. All right, last section of,
Yes, please.
No, I'm not going to know the answer to that. Probably both kings. I would assume both kings because there are going to be...
Some of them in First Kings.
Yes. Correct. It's not all of them are going to be in First King and all of them are in Second Kings necessarily, but throughout the First and Second Kings, and then also you'd assume First, Second Chronicles because they're parallel, right? You're going to see the curses come true.
Although
I mean, because famine is going
to
happen.
It a lot more in
what?
The Chronicles seem to minimize it.
Yes.
The
line of David, because Chronicles is only Judah. Yeah. So in Kings, you're going to get the north, and in the north, it was just bad king. I mean, when I was studying them, it's like, it's easy to remember the north. They're just all bad,
right.
100%. You know, in the south, you got to remember the random good kings, but in the north, they're just all bad.
Is it just Israel that does these things? You know, you look at pictures of starving people now in Somalia and some places, and
they're still not eating their children. I'm sure it's not just Israel in all through history that has eaten a child in times of siege or starvation, but it's part of the curse. It is a level of depravity that you have to reach, that even when you're starving, you don't sink that low. You mean you would rather just curl up and die than, but I mean, you hear stories about the sailors on the rafts at sea, you know, shipwrecked. Or whatever, you know, and then
crossing the plains over to California.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, it has happened throughout history, but we look at those and we're like, no, that's a level of depravity that is not normal to reach, even in desperate times. But that's part of the curse, is that Israel, you are going to sink so far that you are going to act against your natural parental instincts. Good question. Anything else? All right. Can someone read for me verse 58 to 68?
If you are not careful to do all the words of this law, which are written in this book, to fear this glorious and fearsome name, Yahweh your God, then Yahweh will bring wondrous plagues on you and plagues on those who are your seed, even great and enduring plagues and miserable and enduring sicknesses. And he will bring back on you all the diseases of Egypt of which you were afraid, and they will cling to you. Also, every sickness and every plague which is not written in the book of this law, Yahweh will bring on you until you are destroyed. Then you shall remain few in number, whereas you were as numerous as the stars of heaven, because you did not listen to the voice of Yahweh your God. And it will be that as Yahweh delighted over you to prosper you and multiply you, so Yahweh will delight over you to make you perish and destroy you, and you will be torn from the land where you are entering to possess it. Moreover, Yahweh will scatter you among all peoples from one end of the earth to the other end of the earth, And there you shall serve other gods, wood and stone, which you or your fathers have not known. Moreover, among those nations you shall find no relief, and there will be no resting place for the sole of your foot. But there Yahweh will give you a trembling heart, failing of eyes, and despair of soul. So your life shall hang in doubt before you, and you will be in dread night and day, and shall not have any faith in your life. In the morning you shall say, would that it were evening. And at the evening you shall say, would that it were morning, because of the dread of your heart, which you dread, and because of the sight of your eyes, which you will see. And Yahweh will bring you back to Egypt in ships, by the way about which I spoke to you. You will never see it again. And there you will offer yourselves for sale to your enemies as male and female slaves, but there will be no buyer.
Okay, so this is exile, okay? They end up in exile. Verse 58, if you are not careful to observe all the words of this law which are written in this book, okay? So Moses is almost done. I mean, we still have several more chapters, but we are nearing the end of Moses' sermon to the second generation on the plains of Moab, okay? And he has now said, this is all going to be written in a book. Because remember, he's speaking all of this to Israel. Okay? So every law that he is going to record in this book, they are to obey. They have to be careful to observe all the words. Okay? To fear this honored and awesome name, the Lord your God. That phrase, Lord your God, it's the same phrase as in Deuteronomy 6:4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is your God. The Lord is one. It's Adonai Eloheinu, or it would be Yahweh Eloheinu, but they don't say Yahweh when they read it. So it's that same phrase. So it goes back to the beginning, Deuteronomy 6. Okay, this is the key. They did not love the Lord your God. They did not fear. They did not honor. They did not obey God. Okay, they were not loyal. So now there is judgment. Okay. Again, 59, plagues, more plagues. I will bring extraordinary plagues on you and your descendants, even severe and lasting plagues and miserable and chronic sicknesses. I mean, you just can't get worse. If it's bad, it's going to happen. If you can imagine it and it's terrible, it's going to happen. Okay, the worst sickness, and then even beyond your imaginations, it's going to happen. Again, 60, he will bring back on you all the diseases of Egypt. So we're back to Egypt and the 10 plagues. Okay. Of which you were afraid, right? I'm sure as Israel watched God send the 10 plagues on Egypt, it filled their hearts with fear because they're like, what if it's us, right? And God says, it's coming. You don't obey, you're going to get treated like I treated Egypt, okay? Verse 61, and in case there's anything left out, also every sickness and every plague which not written in the book of the law, the Lord will bring on you until you are destroyed. Okay? So there's going to be worse than what's recorded. We've recorded some things, some sicknesses, some plagues, but that's not going to be all of them. There are going to be things that are going to happen that haven't even been written down. Until you are destroyed. Verse 62, this is almost a reversal of the Abrahamic covenant. Effect number one, reduction in numbers. Then you shall be left few in number, whereas you are numerous as the stars of heaven, right? That's what God told Abraham. I will, right? Abrahamic covenant, land, seed, blessing. They're going to lose the land. They're going to go into exile. They're going to lose the seed. I mean, obviously Jesus is still coming, but the numbers seed part, they're going to lose. They were numerous as the stars of heaven. And basically, there's only going to be a remnant left. Verse 63, it shall come about that as the Lord delighted over you to prosper you and multiply you, that was his delight to fulfill his promise, to take you from one childless man, right, to a great nation. Abraham, you know, he was childless for the first 100 years of his life. Then he finally gets Isaac, okay? Well, he had Ishmael in there, but that one didn't count, right? He finally has Isaac through Sarah. And so God delighted to multiply Abraham's seed. And in the same way he delighted to do that, because you have abandoned God, he is going to delight to destroy you. Okay, you'll be torn from the land. He's going to take away the land blessing. And he will scatter you. Okay. Verse 64 to 68, this is effect two, which is exile. Okay. Moreover, the Lord will scatter you among all peoples from one end of the earth to the other. And there, again, it's a curse to serve gods of wood and stone, which you or your fathers have not known. And remember, they were supposed to come into the land, the promised land, and God would give them rest. Right? Once they conquered the Canaanites, conquered the land, God was going to give them rest, and they were supposed to flourish in everything. Now, in exile, verse 65, among these nations you shall find no rest. There will be no resting place for the sole of your foot. But there the Lord will give you a trembling heart, failing of eyes, and despairing of soul. You will have no hope. Your life shall hang in doubt before you. You don't even know if you're going to make it to the next day. Okay? You have no assurance of your life. In the morning, you're like, oh, I wish it were evening. In the evening, oh, I wish it were morning, right? Your life is so volatile, you don't know what's coming, and you dread every moment. Okay. Because, end of verse 67, because of the dread of your heart, which you dread, and for the sight of your eyes, which you will see. You're just scared about what's going to happen next. And where do they end up in verse 68? Back in Egypt. They go to Egypt and they can't even be sold as slaves. They have gone back to the beginning. God freed them from Egypt. That's his signature move, salvation. And because Israel is going to fail and they're not going to obey, they are going to end up back where they started. Why? Did salvation number one in the Exodus save them? Why? Because it didn't change their heart. So what do they need? They need a second exodus. They need a heart. They need a second exodus that affects their heart. Right? Okay. So verse 68, God says, you're going to end up back in Egypt. And I said, you'll never see it again. But because of your disobedience, because you do not choose to obey, that's where you're going to end up. You will offer yourselves for sale to the enemies as male and female slaves, but there will be no buyer there. Okay.
Is that going to be because they're too afraid of what God has already done to their nation, that they don't want it to happen again?
Yeah. Now, so this actually returning to Egypt, I don't know that we have great record of them actually doing this part. But who went to Egypt? Jesus. Let's go to Matthew. Can someone read for me Matthew? Matthew 2, verse 13 through 15. No, when he was a baby. Remember? He would have been two. Yes, they had to flee to Egypt. Matthew 2, 13 through 15. Can someone read that for me?
Now when they had gone, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, get up, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to destroy him. So Joseph got up and took the child and his mother while it was still night and left for Egypt. He remained there till the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet, out of Egypt I called my son.
Okay, and then, Mom, can you also read verses 19 to 23?
But when Herod died, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, get up, take the child and his mother, and go into the land of Israel, for those who sought the child's life are dead. So Joseph got up, took the child and his mother, and came into the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning over Judea in the place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Then after being warned by God in a dream, he left for the regions of Galilee and came and lived in a city called Nazareth. This was to fulfill what was spoken through the prophets. He shall be called a Nazarene.
Okay, so Jesus himself went down to Egypt, and he was called out of Egypt. And it's more, I mean, yes, it's to fulfill the prophecy, out of Egypt I call my son, but why in the world did God's son have to go down to Egypt in the first place? Corporate solidarity, right? Jesus represents his people. And so when Jesus went down to Egypt, he was representing all Israel. When he exits out of Egypt, Jesus's exodus is the exodus of his people, because we are finally getting to an exodus that can change the heart. Okay, then can someone read for me Matthew 5, verses 1 through 3? Okay, Jesus goes up on a what?
Mountain.
On a mountain. Who else went up on a mountain?
Moses.
Who is Jesus? The second Moses. Who else had to go up on mountains? That Moses just said, you go up on this mountain, you go up on that mountain. The Israelites to read the
blessings
and curses. Jesus goes up on a mountain, and what is the first word he says?
Blessed.
And where are the curses?
They're not there.
Sorry. It gets me every time, because in man, in Israel, all it is curses. And that's all we can get. And when we rely on ourselves, that's all that's coming. And Jesus goes up a mountain, and all he has to say is blessed. Blessed, 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 and the whole sermon, there's not a curse, right? Because in Christ, all the curses are gone, right? This is, I'm sorry. Abby's laughing at me. Sorry. In Christ's life, his death and resurrection, we finally have the answer to the curses of Deuteronomy 28. Deuteronomy 27 and 28, we can finally be judicially righteous before God. And we can finally, as a church, stand blessed before God.
While we were still enemies with him.
Exactly, right? I mean, he's saying this to his disciples, and his disciples are still in the wibbly-wobbly phase of not knowing what's going on, you know? So that's the good news of Deuteronomy 28. It's not in Deuteronomy 28, it's in Matthew, all the way at the Sermon on the Mount. All right, sorry for the breakdown. Questions, Deuteronomy 28.
Yeah. Kind of interesting. My grandma has a note here about specifically 64 to 68.
Yes.
And in 64 it says, moreover, the Lord will scatter you among all people.
Yes.
So this note says, prophecy of the dispersion of the Jewish people among all peoples results after the destruction of Jerusalem by the Romans in 1870. And at that time, too, many were consigned to slavery and transported in ships to Egypt.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Okay.
So you mentioned that there isn't a recording of,
right,
like either the Assyrian,
right, or Babylon, yeah,
anything in relation to however, there is,
right,
history related to,
okay, after Titus
after
destroyed,
yeah,
Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. Good, thank you. Anything else? Deuteronomy 28. All right. Deuteronomy 29. Yes, I know. That's what makes 29 interesting. Okay. So Deuteronomy 29, there are going to be three tensions that are emphasized in Deuteronomy 29. Okay? Okay, to remember our terms, vertical is individual between you and God, right? Mm-hmm. Okay? Horizontal is corporate between man to man. Okay? So we're going to use these terms in the three tensions, right? First is a vertical to vertical tension. Okay? If we remember, chapter 6 through 11 in Deuteronomy is focused on the heart, right? If we remember, chapters 5 through 11 are the general stipulations. Chapter 5 is obviously the Ten Commandments. Then 6 to 11 focuses on the heart, which basically the point is you can obey the Ten Commandments, but if you don't have the right heart, it doesn't matter, okay? God's concerned about the heart. Okay, so from Deuteronomy 6, fulfillment of the law has never been about rote obedience, right? I mean, later on in the Old Testament, God says, why are you sacrificing? You know, I'm sick of bulls and goats. And you're like, oh, God, you commanded it. Okay, but he didn't care. Why? Because their heart was not in the right place. Okay, so it has never been about rote obedience, but it's from obedience from the heart. Mom, do you want to answer this? This is your... Vertical is between you and God. So it's personal, it's individual, it's between you and God. Her bags didn't come yesterday, so. And she had given them my phone number. Okay, to get a heart right? Deuteronomy 10:16, can someone read that for me?
So circumcise your heart and stiffen your neck no longer.
Okay, so God says, you want to have a right heart? Get a new heart. Okay, God. I don't know how to do that, right? And he says to circumcise your heart. Okay, circumcision. In the ancient Near East, the foreskin was considered unclean. For whatever reason, that's just what they considered it. They considered it was just inherently unclean. And often, priests were circumcised in other religions, okay? Often the priests were circumcised because they were consecrated to their God. And so they removed the foreskin to therefore be holy to God, right? So God says to Israel as a nation, not only are your priests going to be circumcised, right, but the entire nation is going to be circumcised. All the males are to be circumcised because the nation as a whole, right, you are to be a kingdom of priests. It's not just your priests, it's going to be everybody is circumcised, right? So that's the idea of circumcision. You take what is inherently unclean and you remove it. And it is a symbol that you are totally consecrated to God. Yeah, now do that to your heart. Okay, so basically, you're supposed to take the bad part of your heart and remove it. You take the sinful part of your heart and you remove it. You get rid of it. That's the idea. Okay, you have to clean up your heart because your heart is inherently unclean. Okay, your heart is supposed to be set aside, holy, unquestionably God's. What's the problem? You can't do it. Okay, you cannot do it. So that's going to be question number one. God is requiring something of you that you cannot do. Okay, so that's tension one, vertical tension. The second tension is a vertical to horizontal tension. How does the individual person's relationship with God affect the corporate? Okay, so vertical between me and God, corporate, how does that affect everybody else? Okay, so in some senses, the failure of the corporate affects the individual. Think Joshua and Caleb, right? 12 spies, 10 were bad and 2 were good, right? Well, so did Joshua and Caleb get to enter the land?
Yes,
but they still had to wait the 40 years. So they got to survive. But they still also went through the judgment as well, right? So they were righteous. They said, let's go do it. But because the 10 were bad, the corporate was bad, it impacts them as well, okay? So to obtain the blessings on a corporate level over there, to get all those, each individual has to be good, right? You might be like, we're in trouble, right? You know, because you struggle with that part of the law and I struggle with this part of the law, and the command is to keep all the law, right? All of it, every single word of it. And so if each individual can't do it, how are you ever going to end up in the blessings column? Because the failure of the individual affects the corporate. Does that make sense? Okay, chapter 27, the curses were individual. It established the judicial guilt of every single person. Chapter 28, because every single individual person is guilty, therefore these are the curses, the punishments that are coming on the nation as a whole, on the corporate. But it starts with the failure of the individual. So if every individual can't be perfect, how in the world do we ever end up in the blessings column? That's right. And that's why I cry. Okay. Okay, then the third tension. Horizontal to horizontal. This is nation to nations. If you remember Abrahamic covenant, what was the purpose of the nation of Israel? To bless the nations. But if the nation can't do it, if every individual has to be perfect in order to get the blessings, in order to be a good example to the nations, how in the world is that ever going to work? Because the individual fail, therefore the corporate will fail, therefore how in the world are the nations going to be blessed?
It ends up being a negative blessing. Don't be like that.
That's right. That is right. Okay. So, the Abrahamic covenant tells you what God will do. If you remember, what are the conditions on Abraham? What does Abraham have to do as part of the Abrahamic covenant? Nothing. God just says, I will give you land, I will make you a great nation, and you will be a blessing to the nations. Abraham doesn't have to do anything. Nothing. That nothing is required of him. Yes. Yes. And who, so he divides the animals and who passes through?
God.
And what, yeah, and Abraham is doing what?
Nothing.
Sleeping. Okay, because God is going to accomplish the Abrahamic covenant, right? So then you get the Mosaic covenant, okay? And the Mosaic covenant sets up the initial structures to get the job done, right? Because in the Mosaic covenant, finally we have a nation, right? In Abraham, we don't really have a nation. We have one dude, okay? In Mosaic covenant, we have a nation, and they get the Levitical system, the whole tabernacle system on how they're going to approach God and have a relationship with God. They get the law. These are all the things that you need to do in order to have a special relationship with God, okay? But the Mosaic covenant, if you remember when we're studying the Levitical system, it is a model, right? It is pointing to the real thing, right? The tabernacle is to point you to Christ, right? Remember we said you could be judged in the model and still be ultimately saved, or you could do the model perfectly and still not be saved, because the model doesn't save you. A model airplane doesn't actually transport you to Europe, right? It's a picture, and you can see maybe how it all works, but it's not going to actually transport you anywhere, okay? So it is a model, and you are looking for the real thing, okay? It's all right. Okay, so the covenant, the Mosaic covenant is meant to teach. Keeping the law never saved you, never did, not in the Old Testament, not in the New Testament, it never saves you. But it is a means, obeying the law is a means to horizontal blessing. What's the problem? Can Israel keep the law? No. Okay. Okay. So, like Marion said, what's it going to do? It's going to show the world that God judges in righteousness. That's what the Mosaic covenant is going to do. Okay. That Israel's going to fail and God's going to judge in righteousness and something better is coming. Okay. Does that make sense? So we have vertical tension. Right? God requires something of me I cannot do. We have vertical to horizontal. If I fail, that means ultimately the corporate is going to fail because each individual is going to fail. Okay? And then if the entire corporate fails, how in the world can the corporate be a blessing to the other nations? Okay? So those are the three tensions that are brought to a head here in Deuteronomy 29. And we will... try to not make it through the first blessing. Okay. So can someone read Deuteronomy 29, verses 1 to 9?
These are the words of the covenant the Lord commanded Moses to make with the Israelites in the land of Moab, in addition to the covenant he had made with them at Horeb. Moses summoned all of Israel and said to them, "You have seen with your own eyes everything that the Lord did in Egypt to Pharaoh, to all his officials, and his entire land. You saw with your own eyes the great tricks and the great signs and wonders." Sorry, not tricks. Trials, and great signs and wonders. Yet, to this day, the Lord has not given you a mind to understand, eyes to see, or ears to hear. I led you 40 years in the wilderness. Your clothes and your sandals on your feet did not wear out. You did not eat bread or drink wine or beer, so that you might know that I am Yahweh your God. When you reached this place,
Sihon, king of Heshbon, and Og, king of Bashan, came out against us in battle, but we defeated them. We took their land and gave it as an inheritance to the Reubenites, the Gadites, and half the tribe of Manasseh. Therefore, observe the words of this covenant and follow them so that you will succeed in everything that you do.
Okay, so this is going to be the first tension, the vertical tension. God's going to require something me I cannot do, okay? Verse 1, actually in the Hebrew, is verse 69 of chapter 28, and it really belongs in chapter 28, okay? These are the words of the covenant, which he's talking about the everything that's come before, okay? Which the Lord commanded Moses to make with the sons of Israel in the land of Moab, besides the covenant which he made with them at Horeb, okay? So there's the covenant at Sinai. Now, this is a renewal of the covenant with the second generation, because the people who made the first covenant, they're all dead now. Okay, so this is a covenant that the people have entered into. They have agreed to. They have said, we're going to do that. That includes all the blessings and the curses of chapters 27 and 28. Okay, verse 2 through 4, is this emphasizes the sovereignty of God. Okay, Moses summoned all Israel and said to them, you, all of you, you have seen all that the Lord did before your eyes in the land of Egypt. Okay? These people, the second generation, we're back on the plains of Moab, okay, were all eyewitnesses to what God has done. Now, Moses is using a little bit of hyperbole, because did every single person that stood before him, were they all in Egypt? No. Because some of them would have been born in the 40 years of wandering, all right? But a good chunk of them would have been in Egypt. Okay? Remember, you died in the wilderness if you were counted in that first census, which was 20 years old and older. So that means you could have lived the first 19 years of your life in Egypt, and that is old enough to remember a lot of it. Now, granted, you spent more time out of Egypt than in Egypt, but 19, and Egypt was such a dramatic experience. I'm sure even if you were like 5 or maybe even 4, you would still have impressions and memories of Egypt. Okay, so Moses uses a little bit of hyperbole, because not literally every single person was in Egypt, okay? But he is saying you all were eyewitnesses to what God has done, and maybe not all of you are in Egypt, but you certainly were all in the wilderness, and you certainly all 100% of you saw how God provided for you in the wilderness, which is verse 5, okay? So they were all eyewitnesses to what God has done. Verse 3, the great trials, okay, this is the power of God's judgment, right? God judged Egypt. And again, signs, this points to something else, communicates a message, we talked about this today, and wonders, unparalleled action. All that happened to Egypt was to communicate something to Israel, okay? Trials, signs, wonders, Israel, did you get the message? That's the question. What does verse 4 say? No. Yeah, what does it say?
Oh, yet to this day the Lord has not given you a heart to know, nor eyes to see.
That's right.
Ears to hear.
Okay, so the answer is a resounding no. You're all eyewitnesses. I mean, and this is the question over and over again we've gotten, right? How in the world did Israel see all this, experience all this, and not get it? They were in Egypt. They literally heard God's voice at Sinai speak the Ten Commandments to them. I mean, who hears God's voice out loud? Nobody. But they did. They saw the cloud. They saw the fire. They saw God part the Red Sea. This generation is going to see God part the Jordan. You know, they see all these things. Do they get the message? And the answer is no. But why? God hasn't given them the heart. They can't learn the lesson because God has not changed their heart. 10:16, circumcise your heart. Oh, but God hasn't done it yet. Chapter 29. Israel, you're up a creek without a paddle. Okay? That's basically what it's saying. God has prevented it. Israel can't circumcise their own heart, and to this point, God has not done it for them. So this whole covenant is doomed to failure because God is requiring something of Israel that they cannot do. He has to do it, and he hasn't done it.
And yet man is responsible.
And yet man is responsible. Okay.
And those are things we can't
Secret things belong to the Lord. Yes. Yeah. Okay. But basically, verse 4 is saying this whole covenant is doomed to failure on purpose. Right? Because could God give them a heart to know and eyes to see and ears to hear? Could he do that? Yes, he could. Of course he could. But he hasn't. And there, yes, okay. And this is, you have to remember, there's always individuals, right? Because did Moses have a heart to hear, eyes to see, ears to hear, whatever, heart to know, right? Did Joshua? Yes, okay. So there are always going to be individuals that God has changed their heart. But as a whole, as a corporate, right? And so the majority of individuals, they did not. And even in this generation, it is possible that a good chunk of them did, because this generation does a good job. They do obey God, okay? But the generations to come, oh my goodness, what follows Joshua? Right? Judges. And let me tell you, they did not have hearts to know or eyes to see or ears to hear, right? Because it's just the disaster after disaster after disaster that happens. But basically, this is saying this covenant is doomed to failure. They don't have a heart to know. They don't have eyes to see. They cannot see and perceive and understand what is happening. Yes, they could tell you the facts, but do they know the implication and the truths behind those facts? No. Ears to hear. They don't have ears to hear. They can't receive the message. It's like, you know, sometimes you say something to your children and you're like, it goes in one ear and out the other, and that's the end of that, and they never think about it again. That's what Israel was like, right? Went in one ear and out the other. They didn't understand. Okay, God made it this way on purpose, and that is sometimes a hard truth for us to grapple with. Okay, here's the deal. That is his prerogative, and it is his sovereignty. He is God, we are not. That's right. He is the potter, we are the clay, right? The clay does not have the right to say to the potter, why did you make me this way? Okay. Yes. Yes, very much so. Very much so. They still have a purpose to play. And in the New Testament, it says these things were written for our learning, for our example, right? So we're supposed to look back at Israel, and we are supposed to learn, and we are supposed to, they're supposed to be an example to us. Okay? So our logic, right, would say that's totally not fair, God. It's not fair to require something of Israel that they are incapable of doing. Okay, and then bring judgment when they don't do it, you know. So that is what our logic would say. And the rest of verses 5 to 9 kind of address that. Okay, verse 5 to 6. God led them 40 years in the wilderness, and what did he do for them? End of verse 5.
Everything.
Yeah, but specifically, what did he do?
Set the
yes.
Not worn
out. Yeah, they had the same out for 40 years. And it never got a hole in it. It never wore thin. God promised to give them a land, right? He promised to sustain them through the 40 years. Did that require God not allowing their clothes or shoes to wear out?
No.
Because he could have done other things, right? Mm-hmm. He could have provided clothes other ways, you know, or let them run around half naked. It's hot. Yeah. You know, he didn't have to. But he goes above and beyond his end of the bargain. He says, you wandered for 40 years. Not only did I take care of you, you didn't even have to buy a new outfit. You didn't ever have to buy a new pair of shoes.
And they were walking in the desert.
And they were walking in the desert.
How many babies were born? I mean, the ladies needed changing
right.
The clothes.
Right.
The sizes of people growing up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
40 years.
Yeah.
Abner thinks, I don't know, but he thinks you got your baby clothes and then they just grew with you. I don't know if that's entirely true, but that's his interpretation. So so it's like you got your baby clothes and you never need another outfit the rest of your life. Yeah. Yeah. And so, but the point is, right, he goes above and beyond. Verse 6. You have not eaten bread, nor have you drunk wine or strong drink, in order that you might know that I am the Lord your God. So he took extra care of you. They didn't have to get their own bread. They didn't have to get their own water, right? God provided all for them. Manna every day. Water from the rock, okay? God went above and beyond and provided for them. And what is the purpose? that you might know that I am the Lord your God. All of that was to help them know that God was caring for them, right? But they don't have eyes to see and they don't have ears to hear. Okay, so he kept his end of the bargain and then some. Verse 7 and 8. When you reach this place, Sihon the king of Heshbon and Og the king of Bashan came out to meet us for battle. But we defeated them and we took their land and gave it as an inheritance, the Reubenites, the Gadites, half tribe of Manasseh. Okay? Yahweh is the only reason that Israel succeeds. Why did they succeed in battle against Sihon and Og? Right? It's because of God. And technically, is Transjordan part of the Promised Land?
No,
it's not. Whenever it lists the borders of the Promised Land, Transjordan is never included. So God's giving them Promised Land. He's even already given them extra land. Okay? So he has gone above and beyond his end of the bargain. Okay? So because God has kept his end of the bargain and gone above and beyond it, Israel is required to keep their end of the bargain. Okay? Even if they can't. And if they don't, and we know they won't, they are guilty. Verse 9. So keep the words of this covenant to do them, that you may prosper in all that you do. Okay? Israel entered into this covenant, so they have to keep it. If you remember at Sinai, when God speaks the Ten Commandments, what is Israel's response?
Terrified.
Well, they are terrified.
They are terrified too.
But they do. They say, we will do it all. Israel enters into this voluntarily. Now, granted, if they didn't, then they're going to die in the wilderness without God, right? However, they did sign up for this, right? And God had listed the Ten Commandments, and they had heard God's voice himself speak it to them. Okay? So, they have entered it voluntarily, so they have to keep it. It says, keep the words, every single word. Israel now has no choice. They are totally responsible. Okay? Fairness has nothing to do with ability. They agreed to it. God kept his end. Now Israel is required to keep their end. Okay? They have to keep their end of the bargain. The problem is they can't. And we have to end there today. So, questions, the first 9 verses of chapter 29.
I noticed in verse 4.
Yes.
Her translation said, yet to this day the Lord has not given you a mind.
Yes.
You know, mindset, heart. Is there any distinction?
I would say heart. I'm pretty sure, I would have to look it up to verify. I'm pretty sure it's the same word that's been used for heart through the rest. I don't know if HCSB is consistent with mind instead of heart. And it's hard because in the Jewish understanding of the heart, it's more of our understanding of the mind. Because when we understand the heart, we more think emotions, the seat of emotions. For the Jews, the heart was the seat of the intellect. So I don't know if HCSB then is consistent with translating that word mind would be my question. I don't know. Yeah. And I'd have to look at the Hebrew, but the idea is the same. I mean, when we think heart, this, a heart to know, we can't think just, I feel good about God. That's not what it's about. It's about our mind knowing God. So that would be my guess why her translation said mind instead of heart. Good. Any other questions? All right. We will pick up there next week.